Welcome to the Dairy to Wealth podcast. This is Guilherme, and I will host today's episode. And I'm very excited because today's guest is Dr. John Kent, professor in the Department of Animal Bioscience at the University of Guelph. And we will have a really nice conversation about his research program on nutrition modeling and also precision feeding for dairy cows. So, John, thanks for participating, and perhaps you could start telling us a little bit about your story, your background, and your experiencing with nutrition.
All right. Thanks a lot, Guilherme. Thanks for the invitation to be on the podcast here with you. I look forward to having a good conversation. So yeah, nutrition, like how did I get into nutrition? I'm originally from New Brunswick on the east coast of Canada. I did a bachelor's degree in Nova Scotia at a school, a very small school that really was just starting a degree program, a bachelor's degree. I was in the second class that came out of there with a bachelor's degree. And I didn't know what nutrition was. So I grew up in outside of a small town. We had a cow that we milked by hand and raised a calf for meat. And I worked on a farm next door. It was a beef farm. And he also had about 30 sows that he raised wiener pigs from. And so I got paid in pigs and pig feed, you know? And so I just grew pigs at home. And that was sort of my thing. And so I knew I was going to go to agricultural college. But I didn't know what nutrition was. I remember in third year, we had to go down and meet the animal science profs and sort of talk about what classes we were supposed to take. And there was a student next to me in my class, and she was like, I'm going to do nutrition. And I looked at her and I didn't even know what it was. You know, I knew about feeding of animals, but I didn't know the whole science of nutrition until I took a class. And I never turned back. You know, I really enjoyed it very much. And because it was such a small school, they didn't have grad students. So all the research that was done by summer students and undergrad students. So I got involved in research projects as a third and fourth year student and did digestibility in pigs. Actually, pigs was my thing. So I studied pig nutrition. And I did a calcium kinetic study in goats. You know, as an undergrad, very complex research kind of project. So it was great experience at that small school, really good experience. And one of the profs I had been to the University of California for his grad school. And he said, oh, you should apply to the States and you should apply to California particularly. So I did, and I got accepted. And that's where I did a master's and PhD. And there's no pigs in California. Like, it's just too hot for a swine industry, but okay. It's got a really big dairy industry. And so that's what I got involved in, dairy nutrition. That's the work that was being done there. Very big dairy farms, you know, thousands of cows per farm. And there was a lot of funding for dairy nutrition work. So that's how I got into it. And it's where I still am today, doing dairy nutrition.
Thanks for sharing, John. That's very interesting to learn and to hear about your first steps, your interest in pigs initially, and then the transition to cows, and then going really deep on nutrition, right?
Yeah, really deep, you know. So it was very detailed types of nutrition experiments and research that was being done there.
That's great, John. So yeah, I think that's a good point to jump to the first section of this episode, which where we're gonna talk a little bit about your research program. So you already talked a little bit about your background and how you started, but I was wondering if you could give us an overview of your research program at the University of Guelph.
Okay. So yeah, the work that I did in California, so learning dairy nutrition, was about milk composition and really about milk protein, how milk protein is synthesized. But one of the things I learned there was modeling. And I think you mentioned that word a little bit already, nutrition modeling. And that's where we take our knowledge of how things work and we describe it with mathematical equations. And it's really chemistry based, you know, like chemistry can be described with equations, And nutrition is basically conversion of nutrients by chemical reactions. So actually, you can use those same equations that a chemist would use to describe nutrient flows in the body of a cow, like how much amino acid is used to make milk protein, or how much energy is, you know, saved in the adipose reserves of a cow. You know, all those kinds of things are chemical. And so that's my research is based on that. And the type of thing that I'm trying to figure out is how much milk protein is made given the nutrition of the cow. And, you know, amino acid nutrition is a big part of that. You can feed specific amino acids like maybe a rumen-protected methionine or lysine. And it works in some cows and not in others to get a response. And so what is the reason for that? What actually drives milk protein synthesis? How does the cow decide how much milk protein to make, how much milk to make in general, how much body reserve to put on, how much dry matter to eat? You know, all those kinds of things are solvable problems that we can figure out. So that's my research has been really focused on that side of things, predicting the synthesis of milk.
That's great, John. And I totally agree with you. And I think that's a really interesting research program. I believe that is all about nutrients and the energy and the requirements of the cows, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I would even go further to say, maybe we'll get into it here, about how cows don't really have requirements. It's more people have requirements. People that are feeding cows are the ones with, you know, that impose the requirement on there. And cows just respond to nutrients. And what we want to know is how much do they respond? And then different cows respond different amounts, you know. So these end up being the kinds of things that you're thinking about in the back of your head as you're wandering around, you know, in between work and home or whatever, you know.
That's a great point. And we're gonna get there. So, but before we talk about feeding individual cows, and I think this would be the main topic of this episode, we know that farm animals are typically managed in groups, where an average cow is the target, right?
Yeah.
And I would like to combine this thought with the fact that you have been working with different areas in the nutrition field. So which ingredients you think that would give us an opportunity to change the diet and perhaps meet the requirements of cows and not right. People, right? People's requirements.
Yeah.
And if you could try to focus a little bit on TMRs in Canada and some ingredients that perhaps we could work with to go in the direction of individual cows requirements.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is a good question. It's a big question. You know, even to start thinking about the average cow that you're feeding, it's not even really an average, maybe it's an average, but at the high end, you know, but there are sort of issues related to that, knowing how much you should feed the animal. So yeah, typically in Ontario, like a TMR here is based on alfalfa and corn silages, right? So those are your homegrown like feed ingredients, and then also a lot of high moisture corn, you know, that's also quite readily available. So those are things that you've got to start with, and they're generally cheaper than other ingredients that you have to buy, you know, from off farm, and maybe you have some control over them a little bit as well, although the weather also plays a big, you know, effect in there. And but there's other things in the TMR as well that those ingredients do not provide, you know. So those ingredients have very good fiber in them. You can control maybe the quality of the fiber, like how degradable it is and how digestible it's going to be for the cow and how much nutrient the cow will get out of it. But then you've got to put in other things, like you're not going to be able to max out the performance of the cow just with those particular ingredients. And so there are going to be things like proteins, particular quality proteins, like how degradable is the protein that you feed. And typically in forages, it's very rumen degradable. And if you want to manipulate the amino acid supply to the cow, you're going to need a different kind of a protein source than what you can grow on the farm, typically. So you got to purchase in some expensive protein ingredients. And, you know, how much should you be feeding? It becomes a big important question, right? And also even the energy sources that you're feeding, you know, like high moisture corn is going to have some high energy in it in the form of starch that's degradable. Maybe you need to provide some other energy ingredients. Maybe the degradability of the starch is something that you want to manipulate to get a better performance out of the cow. Or feeding fat, you know, I did actually a lot of studies with fat feeding of cows, and different fat sources then can give you different responses. We've actually learned, not me myself, but just the field in general, we've learned about milk fat depression, and we know a lot of the consequences of feeding different types of fat, how unsaturated they are, that kind of thing. You know, so we understand that system very well because of research. And so we have a lot of control or a lot of influence as ration formulators to make sure we stay away from problem fats, you know, that are going to give us problems in rumen function or something. So, you know, the various protein ingredients or anything that you're purchasing is something then that you want to make a decision about, how much of this should I feed, you know? And the way we've traditionally done it is we set up a requirement. We say, okay, I want cows to produce so much milk, so they're going to have to eat so much of all these different nutrients in order to make that milk. The problem is that maybe they won't. Maybe they won't eat that amount. Or even if they do eat that amount, maybe they'll put it on as body fat instead of making milk out of those nutrients. You know, and so the requirement approach is a bit unsatisfactory in that regard. You don't know whether you're going to get the response that you actually want to get. And just because you feed a richer ration doesn't mean you're going to get better milk production out of your cows. You know, so making that decision of how much do I want to push the cows with my diet is really hard to do with a requirement-based approach. And so that's why we have kind of segued into a different way, which is to predict the response of the cows. And that's really something that's been talked about for decades. Like, there's a pamphlet that came out in the 80s, 1980s, out of the UK, that basically discussed this question, like, should we feed according to requirements or should we feed according to nutrient response? Like, how much the cows are going to respond to a change in the diet? And really, the conclusion is we should go for a response. Like, it makes so much more sense. There's so much more you can do with it. But the difficulty is, are we capable of doing that? And, you know, things have evolved since the 1980s. We are capable. We have the latest NRC publication that just came out. So NRC, every 10 or 20 years, puts out a book of nutrient requirements for dairy cattle. They do it for beef and pigs and all the different species. And the latest one that just came out has a model that really predicts what the response of cows, you can use it to predict what the response of cows will be to a change in the diet. So it really opens up opportunities for us to make these decisions you're talking about of which ingredients should you feed. And then you realize maybe different cows need different supplements.
That's great, John. I agree that it's important what you have in the diet, but it depends on the responses of the cow, right? How she's gonna respond to this diet. Cows respond differently, right? And right. It's interesting to know that people have been thinking about it a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
And another point, John, is that we don't want to put extra ingredients in the diet, right? Because there are costs on the diet and on the ingredients, right? So yeah. Perhaps you could like just touch on this point, the income over feed costs.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's a good question. You know, when we do the requirements, when we formulate according to a requirement, it's done because it's an easy calculation to do. If you can say, oh, this cow needs, you know, so much NDF and so much degradable and undegradable protein and all these various sort of nutrient categories, then we can just find a diet that provides all of those for the minimum cost. And that's a least cost formulation, which we've been using for decades. You know, how do you meet these requirements with a minimal amount of cost? But what if you're predicting what the performance of the animal is going to be, and you say, maybe I want better performance out of the cow? What does that even mean, right? Better performance. And so it could mean income over feed cost. It could mean, you know, that what I want to do is maximize the amount of milk value I'll get from the cow, given the dollars I had to put in to get that. And you can reach a point where you're buying more expensive ingredients and not really getting the dollar value back in terms of the milk. And so you can have too little, you know, expensive ingredient or nutrients, let's say, better. You can have too little in the diet, or you can have too much, you know, and you're not getting a return. So there's like a maximum income over feed costs that you can get. And so this should be one of the goals that we formulate for. And it's a more complicated calculation. Like, you can't just simply say, here's one diet that gives you this performance. You got to try a bunch of different diets and see how what your predicted income over feed cost is going to be for each of those different diets, and then get the computer to figure out what is the optimum diet to feed. So it's a more complex calculation, but it's something we can do nowadays. Computers are everywhere, you know.
Yes, I agree. And John, you touched on very important topic, which is like, what is the optimum performance of cows, right? And I think this would be like a good like starting point to the next section, which will be precision feeding. So we have been discussing it already, but cows are different from each other, right? So yeah. And more importantly, they are cows in different stages of life and lactation, right? We have primiparous, we have parous cows, early, mid, or late lactation, different feed efficiencies. So starting talking about precision feeding now, could you explain to us what would be the advantage of precision feeding? I believe that we have some advantage in terms of economics, welfare, sustainability, right?
Yeah, so yeah, there are several different things to unwrap here. And one of them is, like you say, the different goals. So you, even from one farm to another, there can be different goals that are trying to be achieved on the farm. And it could be things related to sustainability, or, you know, it could be just maximum milk production, or maybe the quality of the milk is a concern, you know, a particular protein and fat percentages because of what the milk is going to be used for, you know, what products are going to be made from it. Or it could be also things, you know, as nutritionists, when we go onto farms, one thing we look for is the body weight gain of cows. Like, we don't want them to be getting too much energy reserve, and we don't want them to have too little for the next lactation either. So there are goals not just related to milk, but just that body fat gain, or like the energy balance of the cows, maybe is a way to say it. And then income over feed cost, we mentioned that one. Maybe nutrient runoff or greenhouse gas production, you know, those kinds of things could also be part of the goals. Maybe there's an anaerobic digester, and so there's considerations around using that on the farm. Maybe there are particular, you know, soils and crops that are easy to grow and generate like biomass from, and so you want to take advantage of that opportunity. So there are so many different goals to start with, that you can use a more precise approach to tailor diets to these different goals. And then there's the question about the you know, the different cows on the farm. You know, like you had said, we feed to sort of an average. We kind of treat the whole farm or the whole herd of milking cows or however they're grouped, but we treat this whole group as if they were one cow, you know, and they're all going to respond the same, but we know they don't, right? Like some cows on, you know, you got a single TMR for the whole herd, and some cows are gaining too much body condition, but it's kind of balanced out by other cows that aren't gaining very much at all. And so, you know, on average, we're doing okay. But there's all kinds of missed opportunity with those different animals. And so you're overfeeding one animal while you're underfeeding another one. And so you're the overfeeding problems, you know, that might kick in subsequent lactations, like fatty liver or something like that, is something that you're actually causing with your nutrition. Or then the underfeeding issues that really you could be getting a better performance out of this cow, but you're not, because you're just, you know, you're feeding to this average, or as if they're a single animal. So there's, you know, those opportunities exist in the variation that's there. There's diversity in the cows. Maybe on poultry farms, you know, you're working with chickens that are all very inbred lines, and the genetics company can just tell you, here's what you should feed these chickens. You know, here's how much percent lysine or whatever should be in the diet. And they make those recommendations. But with cows, we don't have that. They're all so different. You know, you mentioned a bunch of different reasons of why they're different at one moment in time on a farm. But that's what makes it challenging and fun, you know, is working with this diversity that's present there. And even in the forages that are present on the farm. So every time you open up a new silo, then you're working with a new forage, and you've got to deal with that. And so we're pretty good at accommodating those kind of changes, but we're not good yet at accommodating the individual differences between cows. And I think it's opportunity, the difference between an average and then the actual individuals that are there.
That's great, John. And this is actually pretty interesting. So the focus of my PhD program is to look at reproduction of cows and health during the transition period, and especially during early lactation. But we also know that the prepartum period and this accumulation, this gain of body weight and accumulation of fat tissue affects a lot the performance of the cow in the next lactation, right? And it contributes to inflammation, clinical diseases, and reproduction performance of these cows. So it's very interesting that the same cow will have different requirements, right? Like during the lactation. So it's very complex, and it's something that changes every time, right?
Right. So even the same cow doesn't need the same diet all the time, but a different, depending on what she's actually trying to accomplish. You can assist that, you know, with the diet that you do offer to her.
Yes, that's pretty cool, actually. So, John, let's jump to the main focus of this episode, which is your project on precision feeding. So perhaps you could just mention partnerships and sponsorships on this project, and then you can jump on a quick overview of the project. I know that you have a postdoctorate student, David Innes, that is also involved on this study. So perhaps you could like just tell us and explain to us what do you envision of precision feeding?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned the partnerships, because that's really what got this going, was the Food from Thought grant that the University of Guelph got. And it was like $70 million or something like that, that was to be used in developing new ways of thinking about managing food production, you know. And in the department at the time, there were a few people who were kind of working towards precision feeding and talking about that word. You know, it was just starting to come online at that time. And Case DeLange was one of them. He was a swine nutritionist who passed away, unfortunately. But, you know, he was big in the same kind of thing on the swine side of precision feeding. And so he was instrumental in getting that Food from Thought grant. And yeah, when it came around, then it was an opportunity for us. They asked us as faculty at the university, what is something new that you haven't been able to work on because of, lack of funds? And is some new area that you think is like futuristic, you know, in terms of improving Canada's food production for the future? And so precision feeding was really something they were looking for. And I said, well, I have some understanding in that area in terms of modeling and just the nutrition that I know. I would like to embark on this. And at the same time, the Elora Dairy Research Center was being rebuilt, basically. A brand new facility was being put in. And it has a lot of the bling that you can put onto cows in order to collect data from them. So we've got these feed intake monitoring system that I'm sure you've used already in your research, you know, and it's really valuable to be able to continuously monitor the intake of cows and to know how much they're eating. And we're also automatically collecting milk production data. And we bought an apparatus that will measure greenhouse gas output, methane output, but actually it also measures CO2 output. And that's really valuable just for knowing how much nutrient is being broken down in the body of the cow. And so if we put together the CO2 output with the intake and the milk production, we can figure out the energy balance of the cows and know, is she losing body condition or gaining? So we don't have to measure body condition score like every 2 weeks or something like that. And after so many weeks, you get an idea of what the change is. We can measure it almost instantaneously on cows with this setup and being able to measure all that kind of stuff. And so that capability opened up the opportunity to do the precision feeding of saying, I know that there are some cows that will gain more condition on the same diet than other cows. And so we can monitor it very quickly, easily with this new facility. And then we should be able to feed the cows different amounts depending on how they're responding to their diets. And so that's really where it came in. And so the overall project that we have and we've been working on for about 5 years, I suppose, is to collect the data automatically from the research herd. And that's taken quite a while just to be able to get that capability. So just because you got the piece of equipment there, it doesn't mean that you're able to get the data and make sense out of it right away. It can take a few years to develop the sort of data pipeline that's needed to integrate the data from each of the different systems together, all in one place. So that was a big part of the project, actually, and it still is, of putting the data all together to say, I don't know just this one thing about this cow. I actually know 10 different things about this cow on every day, like composition of her milk, how much she's eating, how much maybe she's chewing. That's another one that we get automatically. And there's all kinds of data that you can gather. And it's like, that's really going to help this process of formulating diets. So the way we are approaching it is you collect all the data and you can then generate a copy of the cow virtually, or what the phrase now is digital twin. So you create a digital twin of each cow that you have in your herd or in your pen, whatever you're working with. And that's a representation of the cow as the actual NRC model. So NRC puts out a computer model every, couple decades or whatever. And the latest one just came out, I guess it's 2 years ago now. But it describes the nutrient flows in a cow. So it's a computer description of how nutrients flow. And we can make that model be exactly the same as the cow. So the model will predict exactly what the cow is doing, what we see the cow doing in terms of how much she eats, how much milk she puts out, what the composition is, how much body weight she gains, how much CO2 she breathes out into the air. So we can make all those things match up in our digital twin representation of the cow. And once we have that digital twin, then we can feed that virtual cow various diets, and we can see how that virtual cow responds to changes in the diets, and we can find one that does have the maximum income over feed cost, just in the computer. And then the idea is, then let's feed that ration to the cow. So we're also setting up, it's not a data pipeline, but it's a digital automatic feeding of the new ration to the cow, which is mostly going to be the PMR that they'll get. So it's just like sort of robot feeding, supplementing in an automatic milking system, where most of the diet the cow's eating is out in the main barn, out of the manger. And it's a mixed ration that we call a partial mixed ration, because there's also some supplementation going on in the robot. And right now the robotic supplementation is mostly as bait, right? Enticement to get the animals to go in to be milked. But you can actually, there's an opportunity there to feed various mixes and different mixes to different cows as they go in. So it doesn't have to be in an automated milking system. There are other computer feeder type of setups. And actually the one that we use to measure greenhouse gas outputs can be fitted with different augers so that you can feed different rations in there to the different cows. And so that creates a whole entire loop that's all digital of collecting data from the cows. They're free moving cows in a free stall, but we're still able to collect data on them. And then we generate a digital twin inside the computer and then use that to decide how much to feed the cow. And so then finishes the loop, and it just goes round and round all the time. And if you're changing the diet sort of once a week, but collecting new data on the cows after you've made the change on the diet, then you're always keeping track of how the cows do really respond. And so you're always updating your digital twin with the new information that you get as you feed the cow. But that whole loop is all digital. And Dave Innes, you mentioned his name as a postdoc from Australia. He's got this phrase where it's like humans are in the loop or humans are on the loop, you know? And so right now, as nutritionists, we're in the loop. We are actively formulating the diets and making sure that they're being fed to the cows in some kind of way. But eventually, you could move to just humans overseeing the loop. They're just on the loop, and they're watching it and making sure it's working okay. You know, you still got human intervention.
That's a great point. Yes, no, those are really interesting topics, John. This digital twin of the cow, working with a partial mixed ration. And I believe that one of the big challenges would be with the data, right? Records, data analysis, ownership of data, and also data storage, for example, right? Like everyone is talking a lot about data, and you mentioned that this is a big part of the project, right? How you deal with it. And I believe that this perhaps would be like a big challenge for precision feeding.
Yeah, it is. And so that's actually, as we have progressed through this project, that's one of the things that I find is really important to get out there. It's not just the data, but the software to deal with the data. So actually, Dave Innes has put together a really nice package that works with the feed intake data. So we've got these Incentec feeders. Basically, you're collecting data every second kind of thing on the weight of the feeders. And you're getting, at the end of a day, a whole bunch of measures, like hundreds of measures of the weight of the feeder and how much the cow removed from the manger throughout the day. And, you know, there are thousands of numbers that then you've got to look at, and you want to make sure, are they okay? Is every single number in there a good real number? Or were there some things that threw off the machine at particular moments in time? Something is stuck in the weigh cell, or
the wind, right?
Yeah, there's so many things that could go wrong with it, I guess. Yeah. And so Dave has put together a software package that really reads through the data and identifies all kinds of different types of errors. Some of them are logical errors, like it doesn't make sense that there's more feed in the feeder after the cow has eaten. There should always be less. You know, these kind of logical errors. There's some statistical ones that you can pick out as these are outliers. They don't make any sense. And so he's put together this software package that we're putting out there for the public to be able to access and use. And of course, right now, it's the public is researchers that are using this kind of equipment. But eventually, you know, software is going to be needed for farm data processing. And we're contributing to that effort to put it out there for people to access. And same with like the new NRC model, we've written that into a code that we will put out for public access so that they can use the software in a more easy way. And in general, that's one of the big outputs from our research is software that we're making publicly available for whoever wants to use it. And I know it starts with researchers, but eventually it'll get to people using it on farm, for on-farm software.
Sure, John. And going back to what you mentioned, right? The nutritionist needs to be over the data, right? Like over the diet formulation and the calculations, right? Like just watching if this makes sense as well, right? Because sometimes we have technology, we have data, we have automatic calculations and everything, but it's always important to have a human with knowledge to take a look and see if this makes sense, right, as well.
Yeah, so a big part of the software is what we call data visualization, to be able to present some graphs that a person can look at and see very quickly when there are deviations or something. It's like, oh, something happened with that cow. Like, how come her intake all of a sudden dropped right here? And maybe it's an issue with the machine, or maybe it's an issue with the cow, you know? And so that kind of stuff is very valuable.
Yes, no, sure. So John, we are getting close to the end here, but I just have a few last questions. So the first one would be, what do you think that are the challenges on the implementation of precision feeding for producers? So I believe that some challenges would be facility design or introduction of technologies at these farms, right? And also different farmers has different goals, like you mentioned before, right? So what in your mind, like what would be a start point to the inclusion of this precision feeding and how you see it happening in their farms?
Yeah, that's a tricky question because it's sort of, you know, predicting the future kind of thing. And I'm not really sure how it's all going to progress, but that's part of what we're learning here. So I mentioned Food from Thought was one of the funders, but OMAFRA is another funder as well. And so we just recently got some OMAFRA funding, and part of it is to go on to commercial farms and look at how we could, what kinds of things of the activities that we're doing could be translated easily to commercial farms and the type of data collection systems they're starting to put together. With the same kind of goals, like visualizing the data, cleaning it up, making it useful for decision making. So, you know, you mentioned the automatic milking systems. A lot of people are putting those in. They have, you know, the labor saving is one of the big reasons to put them in. And probably also issues with the cow performance, you know, like less mastitis and, you know, the voluntary milking aspect of things that they will milk themselves more than twice a day, typically. And so you get the advantage of that more frequent milking. And I guess there's data collection coming in from those systems as well. So what else is going to end up on farms that has a similar sort of labor saving advantages? I'm not really sure. Camera technology is being studied a lot now. You know, to be able to measure intakes of cows is really expensive, I guess. is the right word to use. Like, the difficulty of it shows up in the expense of what it costs, you know. And so we're fortunate at our research facility here that we can do that, you know, set that up. But it's not really a commercially viable kind of thing at this stage. But are there other technologies that we'll be able to measure intake from? And I think that is possible. Even like CO2 and CH and methane sniffers may be something that can be easily incorporated onto a commercial farm as the price of them drops. And maybe you're just doing it periodically when cows go in to be milked, that you're also measuring the methane and CO2 output of the cows, or if they go into a feeder. And I guess that's also a consideration. We don't have a lot of computer feeders here. In Europe, you'll see there's a lot of computer feeding that's going on, although it's not very individualized. So it's still sort of so many kilos of concentrate per kilo of milk kind of thing. So it's just still going by a requirement approach, not really trying to, you know, change the performance of the cow in a positive way. Yeah, I think it really depends on the price of these various technologies. And as more of them get developed, the price will go down, just like all the digital technology stuff that we take advantage of nowadays. And actually, I think that's one of the values of developing all this software to assist in decision making on farms, is maybe it'll make it more attractive to people to do. You know, look at, everyone is taking pictures. Everyone's a photographer now with their, you know, cameras on their phones. And so it opens up the, you know, the world of photography to everybody to have it so accessible. And so maybe the same thing will happen with digital technologies applied on farms. It opens it up to people to make it fun to farm. I mean, I know, you know, people like me and you, we enjoy the whole process that goes on in farming. But it's hard to get succession planning, you know, like when someone's going to retire from farming, who's going to take it over? And maybe it doesn't look as attractive versus other sort of job opportunities that are out there for young people. But if it's something that you can use, the types of technologies you like using, the same ones that you play video games with and stuff, you know, maybe that makes it a more attractive proposition to get into farming. So I don't know what kind of the consequences of all this new technology are going to be, but something's going to get selected out of the mix that works. Things that work will get selected out, and people will use them and adopt those technologies. And so I don't really know where it's going to go, but there's a real proliferation of these kind of sensors and things that can measure data on cows, and they're going to be used more and more.
Sure, John. I really like the point that you mentioned about the new generation of farmers and perhaps nutritionists as well, right? Perhaps the inclusion of technology can make the business more efficient, but also more attractive for other people. That's very interesting. So we're running out of time here, John, but I just would like to thank you very much for taking the time to participate. And I also would like to thank everyone that listened to us. I hope you like it. And if possible, share this episode with your network and help us promoting dairy at Guelph. Thank you very much, John.
Okay. Thank you very much, Guilherme. And I'm really happy that you're taking on this project and doing these podcasts. It's really good to get all this out into the public.